Blog Talk Radio.
I picture you in the sun, wondering what went wrong.
Hello, Mary.
Falling down on your knees.
Are you having trouble getting through on this radio station?
Sympathy and being caught in between all you wish for and all you see.
And you know, and I'm not able to
try to
find anything
sort of
technical
that you feel that you can
believe in. Yeah, why don't you do that? Well, hello, listeners. This is Karen Tate, and welcome to Voices of the Sacred Feminine. Quite honestly, I don't even know if you're hearing me out there. We're having technical difficulties tonight, and I'm hoping that we can remedy them because I can't see my caller trying to call in, and quite frankly, I'm not even registering on the switchboard. So I suspect that... you may be hearing me, but there's no way I, in the moment, can get my my guest online with me. So I'm going to try to work out these technical difficulties and get back to the show in hopefully in the next 30 minutes or so. So if you're calling live, why don't you check back in with us in a little while, and I'm hoping to work through the difficulties. And worst case scenario, we will do this interview another day, and you know, you can catch it from the archives. I apologize for this. It's not within my control, and quite frankly, I'm a little bit flustered and at a loss as to what to do. This has never happened before in all the time I've been doing this here at Blog Talk, so I apologize for any inconvenience, and I'm going to see if I can get this remedied so we can do the show tonight. Okay, but to do that, I have to get off the line and try to reach someone over at Blog Talk. So please check back in with us in, say, 20 minutes if you wanted to listen live. Thank you. Hi, Mary. Are you still there? This is really crazy. I saw you on the switchboard a moment ago. What I'm going to do is play some music and try to get connected with you again. And so, again, listeners, I so apologize for this, but I'm going to go ahead and put some music on. Oh, wait, maybe there you are.
Hello.
Mary, is that you? Mary?
Yes, it is.
Oh, Mary, let me say, I am so sorry for this this weirdness. I'm wondering if we're in Mercury retrograde or something right now, because I've never had this happen before, and all the time I've been doing the show, these technical difficulties. So please accept my apology for this confusion.
Oh, sure, and quite frankly, right now your voice is very wobbly, so it's still not working properly.
Okay, well, I guess we are going to have to do the best we can do. Apparently, Blog Talk is having some sort of technical problems tonight because, you know, it wasn't registering that I had called in, and neither was it registering that you had called in, and I know we were both calling in. So, anyway, can you hear me well enough to go on with the interview?
It's just very wobbly. Can you hear me clearly?
You sound perfectly okay. So.
Okay, then I'll just work with it.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. Well, you know, let me just go ahead and start at the top as if this didn't happen. You know, I wanted to, you know, thank our listeners, whether you're our regular listeners or our new listeners, for calling in and spending your precious time with me and my wonderful guests. We actually had a schedule change tonight because poor sweetie, Stephen Gehringer, who was supposed to be on the show, is horribly under the weather. And you know how that is. It's hard to be scholarly and connect the dots sometimes when your head just aches so bad. He will be back soon in his place. I have a double feature for listeners tonight. At the top of the hour, we have Mary Lane, who you you are hearing us have a brief chat as we tried to connect with each other. She's written a goddess cookbook of sorts called Divine Nourishment, A Woman's Sacred Journey with Food. And in the second half of the show, coming on probably about 7 o'clock Pacific time, will be Heather Mendel. Let's hope we don't have any trouble getting Heather connected to me. And she's the author of a book called Dancing in the Footsteps of Eve, Retrieving the Healing Gift of the Sacred Feminine for the Human Family Through Myth and Mysticism. So we're going to be talking about rethinking and reclaiming that archetype Eve. So obviously a jam-packed show tonight. I'm certainly glad we made it on the air, and I hope listeners can hear us both well. But first things first, I want to give you an update on how things are going for my Oprah audition, which is we're almost coming to the end. And in that audition, I suggested a show to Oprah where we talk about relevant things, no bread and circuses that distort and distract. Relevant topics is what we want to hear, what you want to hear, stuff like we talk about here on Voices of the Sacred Feminine. Imagine if all the women and the men in the world knew what we knew and talked about what we talked about and had access to this kind of information. And I know they all don't because, you know, when I lived in a different part of the country where people were a lot different. You know, we didn't know about these sort of things. And so anyway, we just want to uplift and educate and share what we know. And I just have to say, you have been phenomenal out there, truly remarkable, powerful, magical, tenacious. As of a few minutes before airtime, we were at 462,000 votes. And here's the challenge. We are saying we are going to try to break 500,000, yes, that's 500,000 votes, by this Friday at 12 midnight. I'm sort of getting goosebumps just saying it because, believe me, when I started on this little journey, I had no idea what to expect. And do you realize we've done this all in less than a month when others, a lot of the other contestants with really big numbers, have been voting for several months. And yes, you have moved me from spot 600 to spot 23. Words can barely express my thanks and gratitude. I just feel like my gratitude is pouring out of my heart. So may Goddess bless us all for this courageous endeavor. No matter how it turns out, we have made an impact, and we'll just have to see how it all works, what she has in store. But we have seen what a force we can be. You know, Goddess power in action, tenacity of Sekhmet, steam of Bridget, social justice of Kali, and the love of Kornian. We are she, and thank you. And if this is the first time you're tuning in and you wonder what in the world I'm talking about, or you want to go online and help vote for me too, because I need your vote in this big last push in these last couple days, and you can vote more than once till midnight on July 3rd. That's legal. That's how this process works, as crazy as it is. But we're in the home stretch here, and I have it on good authority. Other contestants have friends in churches and fraternities voting 24/7 to keep their people in the lead. So go to Google Oprah's network website, Oprah's own. And when you're there, you'll see she's looking for a new host. Just click on that section of the website, and then you can either browse all the audition tapes, but I doubt you want to do that. There's like 9,000. Or if you want to quickly find me, there's a box where you can put my name in, Karen Tate. Please do, and if you watch the audition and you like what you see, please vote for me. Get all your friends and family to vote for me, too. Some of you have suggested that I actually start seeing myself doing the show, so I have. I'm now started to imagine getting the phone call from Oprah's people. I'm seeing them asking me who I want to have on the show, and you know the pool of people I'm going to tap into is you. So this is our chance to get topics important to us on mainstream television. I mean, imagine that. Dare we dream this? Yes, indeed. So one way or another, this all ends Friday at 12 midnight. And, you know, just sort of switching subjects here, I don't want to forget. I want to give a shout-out to Laura Kane for allowing us to use her music, which you heard at the top of the show, I believe, even though we got disconnected and reconnected. That snippet is from her CD, and the song is In the Sun. And I know most of you listen from the archives, but I still remind you anyway and invite you to call in and comment and speak to our guests. The call-in number is 718-766-4662. And lastly, before we chat with our first guest, Mary, I want to remind you about my summer series I've planned to celebrate my first anniversary here on Blog Talk, although I'm actually coming up on 3 years total doing Voices of the Sacred Feminine. The three series that I have planned for the summer for your pleasure are Sacred Knowledge, Men and Goddess, and Sacred Destinations. In July, Men and Goddess kicks off with John Lamb Lash, who some have called the rightful heir of Joseph Campbell's legacy. I'm looking forward to speaking to him. We'll also have scholar Razit Erenger calling in from Turkey to discuss his research of Goddess there in Anatolia, which is the land of the nourishing mothers. Then Pope Runyon will be talking about the goddess Astarte and the deities of the Canaanites, and no doubt maybe some ceremonial magic. Joyce Chapman will be on the show at the bottom of that hour, and she's going to talk to us about realizing our dreams. Joyce was actually instrumental in my submitting that Oprah audition, believe it or not. The lady is good, so don't miss her wisdom. She will share on the 21st of July. Then July 28th, one of my favorite guests is returning, Lydia Rule of Goddess Spirit Banner fame. We're going to kick off Sacred Destinations with Lydia's interview. I believe we're probably going to be discussing a lot of the goddesses and the temples she's found in her travels in Asia. And that same night, at the bottom of the hour, we're going to have Gloria Amendola on. We're going to talk about sacred places of Mary Magdalene. So stay tuned through the summer and catch these special shows, including my interview with Margot Adler. And I don't think we're going to have time to get to what's the buzz tonight, since we have two guests. It's going to be a real jam-packed show, so I'll just try to keep those bees contained in my bonnet until next week. So without further delay, let me turn my attention to my first guest tonight, bringing us the sacred knowledge of divine nourishment. We have Mary Lane on the show, and I want to thank her for her patience. But let me tell you a little bit about her before we start our chat. Through Mary's 30-year career as a professional chef, she awakened and deepened her understanding of the connection between food and nourishment, the wisdom of nature, sexuality, and the divine feminine. She discovered the desire to reclaim these aspects of ourselves lies beneath the surface of our collective movement towards sustainability and balance. She draws upon the wisdom of her own journey and weaves it with her expertise in the ancient Taoist five-element system of nutrition, plant, spirit medicine, sacred sexuality, wild crafting, and professional training as a chef. She's dedicated to supporting women to transform self-rejection buried in the shadowy depths of their unconscious to self-care, honor, and love. She's a graduate of the California Culinary Academy, Nam Singh's Academy of Five-Element Nutrition and Cooking with Chinese Herbs, Elliot Cowan's Plant Spirit Medicine Training, and Clayton College of Nutrition. She's apprenticed Marie Mellinger in wildcrafting wild foods in the Blue Ridge Mountains, studied with several teachers in herbalism, and has a strong background in sacred sexuality. She's owned her own restaurant, flown the world as a high-end private chef, catered numerous health and spiritual retreats, and was formerly chef and recipe developer for the highly acclaimed website worldshealthiestfoods.com. And finally, she is the author of the wonderful book Divine Nourishment, A Woman's Sacred Journey with Food. She offers classes, workshops, and private consultations on eating, cooking, and living seasonally to align with the rhythm and flow of our environment, and provides intimate, nourishing, seasonal retreats for women in her mountain home near Asheville, North Carolina. You may even take her online course offered through Susan Weed's Wise Woman University. Well, Mary, thank you so much for being with us and us, you know, calling back and having some tenacity as we worked through the horrible technical glitch at the beginning of the show.
Thank you, Karen, and thank you for the invitation. It's kind of indicative of the effort that Divine Feminine is going through to come back into the world, isn't it?
You know, I think you're right. It is a struggle, but, you know, women know how to endure. You know, women know how to be tenacious, and yeah, I think that's part of that Divine Feminine energy. You know, when we have to be that way, we just stick to it and get it done.
We've had to. And we continue to have to.
Well, absolutely, absolutely. And you know, and reading through, you know, through your credentials and resume, what an interesting life you've had. I mean, it just sounds, excuse the expression, but it sounds delicious and interesting. How did you, you know, how did you come to this? Is there a story, you know, behind your career as a chef and then how you tied it to the sacred feminine and everything?
Well, there actually is a story behind it. Believe it or not, I was born with a birth trauma. There was a birth trauma that I ended up at 4 months old in a body cast from my neck to my ankles for a month, and I was cut off from nourishment on every level in this world and cut off from my mother. And cut off from my body, and I was fed intravenously. And so ironically, you know, it's the wounded healer journey where I my life became around nourishment. My life became around seeking the nourishment and the love of the Divine Mother right here in this realm on planet Earth. And I turned to nature, I turned to food, I turned to all these different aspects of the Divine Feminine. It's been a huge, huge journey of healing for myself. And so as a result of that, I mean, that's personally what I feel is my credentials. You know,
I see.
The other stuff is just the fillers that helps me put form to this journey.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I'm thinking as you're saying that we really can be defined by our challenges, and we can either let those challenges defeat us, or sometimes we wonder if those challenges were put in our path because they are intended to maybe give our life, you know, shape our destiny, you know, maybe, so to speak. Interesting food for thought. But that is quite a story, denied from nourishment, and so the rest of your life has, in a very positive way, you know, you have turned, you know, lemons into lemonade, so to speak, and taken it into a very positive direction.
I have no doubt that my journey was meant to transform the wounds into my gifts, and in the process, it's healed me on many levels and opened me up to the many aspects of the Divine Feminine, and it's all, and then it becomes my gift for others. Yeah, I have no doubt that was the setup.
You know, and it's interesting, the wisdom of Goddess, you know, sort of setting us on our path. And so, you know, and so you were more than likely divinely guided. So tell us, Mary, let us benefit from your lifetime of wisdom and knowledge that you've, you know, that you've gathered and nurtured. Tell us how this approach to, you know, what makes this approach to food different from, you know, the diets offered women, or, you know, why is this so, you know, such a different approach?
Well, this is actually, it's not a diet spawned from a science project, you know, that compartmentalizes ingredients. Not that knowing the benefits of our food obviously has its place, but it is not meant to replace the very foundation of nature and how nature has an intelligence and a wisdom, and it is self-similar to the wisdom of the divine feminine. And so this approach is literally the most ancient approach in how to nourish yourself. It's about relationship, relationship to the earth, relationship to the plants and the animals, a relationship to the wisdom that is reflected back to us through the natural world, through the earth. And she really actually shows us how we are meant to nourish ourselves in each given environment. So it's not a man-made type of diet, let's say. It is actually going back to how we originally were not separate. We knew we were not separate from the natural world. We were resting in the arms of the Mother Earth. And she guided us through and nourished us and fed us the exact things that we need from season to season in the environment that we live in that supports us, our health on every level, not just our physical, but it is self-similar to our human journey, and it supports our health on our spiritual level, our physical level, our emotional level. It doesn't separate it out. So
you're really talking about a totally different relationship to our food, to our meals. I mean, you are like on the other end of the spectrum from this fast food mania we have. I mean, that's what it sounds like to me.
Absolutely. I'm about going back to following the wisdom of our earth, that following the wisdom of the divine feminine manifested as our earth, as nature. She has an immense wisdom, and she knows exactly what we need when. And that's
so,
what we've lost touch with.
So, you know what, give us examples. Okay, that's sort of like the umbrella concept. But
right.
how do we do this every day? How do we do it in the grocery store? How do we do it when we're going to plan our meals? How do we, how do we connect to the divine feminine and turn our meals into sacred nourishment?
Well, this actually, I mean, there, you can start with very basic steps, as in eating seasonally and eating foods that are grown in your region, not eating foods that are shipped across the world that are grown in a complete different season, let's say. There's an energetic quality to the foods that are grown in season in your environment. And, you know, just going to a farmer's market and looking for foods that are in season is a very basic way to start this. It doesn't, you don't have to go out into nature. You can live in the city and you can start benefiting from this. But what we're really talking about is recognizing our self-similarity, and that by connecting in with the seasons, we are recognizing the self-similarity of our human journey with the seasonal changes that go throughout the cycle of the year. So, you know, just the basic starting point is start eating locally, start eating seasonally, and you automatically will start receiving benefits.
Well, and, you know, that is important, because I wonder, I mean, I'm sure I'm like everybody else out there. I don't really know necessarily when I walk into a Ralph's, so Ralph's is one of our big grocery stores here, and I look at produce or I look at seafood or meat, I don't really know where it comes from, unless on occasion it might have a little sign because they're advertising that the fruit was locally grown. But I'm thinking about the last time I bought seafood, I asked, which I never generally do. I just, it seems, to have not been important, but because of everything happening in the Gulf with the oil, I wanted to buy shrimp. And I asked the guy behind the counter in the market, I said, well, where did the shrimp come from? And the shrimp came from China. Can you imagine, here in California, our shrimp came from China? I was flabbergasted. I mean, who would have thought? That was just amazing. So I guess explain to me, a little bit, kindergarten, simplify it for me. How does it benefit us? I mean, I can understand how it benefits us to eat the foods seasonally, because, if it's summertime, you want to eat light, you don't want heavy soups that maybe you would eat in the winter. I assume that's the kind of thing you mean. If not, feel free to correct me. But does it matter if I eat that shrimp from China or if, I can find safe shrimp to eat that, maybe comes from Sacramento or something?
Well, the closer to your environment that your food comes from, the healthier it's going to be, the fresher it's going to be. That's just basic.
I see.
But what I'm talking about is there is an energetic quality that connects you into your environment, and you start feeling your connection with with the earth, with the rhythms, with the flow. And so when you're shipping food from across the world, that food is coming from a different rhythm, different flow, different season, different everything. That food embodies the qualities, the energetic qualities of that environment that it's grown in. So it's on a very deep soul energetic level. When we're eating foods that embody a complete different energetic quality than the environment that we're actually living in, breathing in, a part of, we don't feel connected. And so there is an imbalance that is created in us, not just on the physical level, but on all levels.
That's very interesting. Yeah, it does. Maybe you said it before, but I needed to hear you say it again because I wasn't quite grasping the concept, but that's really interesting. I understand we're gonna try to eat stuff that's grown or caught more locally, so what would be what would you recommend for the spring? I mean, since this is seasonal, what are the things that would be on our table right now?
Well, depending on where you live, let's take example where I live. First of all, you have to pay attention to what is coming out, and an easy way to do that is by shopping at the farmers market, because the farmers are bringing food to the market that they are growing at that time, and they grow seasonal foods. Let's say, for example, I live in the mountains near Asheville, North Carolina. And an amazing amount of spring greens start coming up, and it's the time of the year where your body is kind of just sloughing off some of the buildup from winter, and your blood needs a little help and nourishing, and your liver needs support and nourishing, and believe it or not, that is exactly the foods that start coming up naturally, not only just in the farmer's market, but in the wild. Nature is naturally bringing these foods forward in the spring. The animals are eating it. When we start eating it, we are aligning with the energetic quality of that season.
And I think you said something about when we do that, we honor the earth and we aren't disconnected or separate from the divine feminine. And I'm starting to get that concept. But you've talked about women have internalized this lack. You know, when we don't do that, is that what you mean when you say we've sort of internalized this lack of respect and suffer from self-rejection? Are those two connected, those two ideas?
Absolutely.
So, can you explain that a little bit more?
Yes, I will. When the divine feminine was banished, let's say, and lost her place as an equal to the masculine, and it's been the natural order, of course, and we're bringing her, she's coming back with force now. But at the same time that that happened, we also lost our relationship and our honoring, respectful relationship in particular with the earth. The divine feminine and the earth are self-similar. Women are self-similar, and we embody this same rhythm and flow, this same intelligence, this same wisdom from soul, to the natural world, to the earth, to the divine feminine. So when we rejected the divine feminine, we rejected our right relationship with the earth. So it's no surprise that we have the problem that we have right now just in the Gulf. All of this is all out of disrespect. It's all out of devaluing the earth and the Great Mother. Well, it's the same thing with the women. They carry that collective wounding. So they've carried it for so long that they internalized and started to believe that there is something wrong with them because they're the feminine. They believe that, you know, that they're second-class citizens. This is all shifting, and it's shifted a great deal over the last 50 years. But it is no coincidence that at the same time that the divine feminine is rising out of the shadows and coming forward and taking her place in the world, that it's the same time that the sustainability movement is moving forward. They run parallel, and we're starting to honor the earth. At the same time, we're starting to honor the divine feminine. And so the rejection of both happened at the same time. And the returning of and honoring of both is happening at the same time. That's not a coincidence. We're self-similar.
And you have a statement here in your materials that says, nourishing ourselves according to this earth's wisdom, like you're explaining to us, teaching us, is not only reclaiming our wisdom, it's a necessary step towards self-care and self-love.
Absolutely. And when you think about it, if we start nourishing ourselves according to the earth's wisdom, then that is the beginning of us honoring our own wisdom when you think about our self-similarity. So we're in the process of honoring our own wisdom. And then how many women in the world, because of this sense of unconscious self-rejection and the unworthiness from being back in the shadows for so many generations, they don't nourish themselves, and they definitely don't nourish themselves according to a wisdom that is a reflection of their own wisdom. So this is a process of reclaiming a deep soul wisdom that the earth and nature is reflecting back to us. So when we turn to that as a reflection of who we are, instead of a society that has a dysfunctional and has had a dysfunctional relationship with the divine feminine, and turn to that as a reflection of who we are, which do you think is going to reflect to us more of our authentic self in a loving, compassionate, honoring way that supports us to reclaim this divine feminine. And I'm not talking about just women. I'm talking about men and women.
Sure, of course. Our whole culture and society you're talking about.
Exactly, exactly. So,
we know, those of us who know about Goddess, we're taught, that Goddess sort of started in some cultures because the people, we even say women created agriculture, that, the goddess is about the earth and, the food she provides. So a goddess and agriculture, go hand in hand. And we've learned from that each season has an energetic quality. But you take it a step further and say the foods also have an energetic quality. Am I understanding that right?
Absolutely.
So talk about that a little bit. Maybe take each season and maybe give us an example of what the energetic quality is as it relates to specific food.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up, because if you line up the energetic quality of each season around the yearly cycle, what you actually have is a map for transformation. So coming into spring, as the young shoots are coming up and the spring foods are coming out, they support you to kind of, they're high energy, they support you to burst through. And it's a time of the year that you want to give birth to yourself. You've been inward for winter, so you want to give birth to yourself. These foods have that energetic quality that supports the body to do that, and to and they relate, they support the emotions, the spiritual journey, as well as just the physical body. And then you move into summer, where these foods are lighter, they have a cooling quality to them, they have an energetic quality that supports the, it's like the peak of the wave that you are dancing on, and it's a more outward time, and these foods support your energy to be more outward.
I'm thinking watermelon.
Like watermelon, of course. It's they're cooling, they're outward. The cooking methods that you use this time of year it nourishes you on a more surface level. And as you go into the winter months, the fall and the winter months, you start energetically pulling in. Nature starts energetically pulling in. And notice that the foods that are really designed and come out at that time of in the fall and stuff are a lot of the foods that grow underneath the surface. They take longer to cook. And they have the energetic quality of going deeper into your body, going deeper inward. And so they actually align you with the energetic quality of the seasons. As you do this and you go through the complete cycle, you can spring forward, you can give birth to yourself with your new visions, your new ideas, you can bring them out into the world. You can let go of what no longer serves you anymore, and you go down into the winter, and you retreat, and you rebuild your life force. You let things that don't serve you anymore slough away, and you nourish the seeds of your next cycle. It's exactly what nature's doing. The foods that come out in the seasons, and you connect that with the appropriate cooking methods that align with this, support you to be in totally connected to this rhythm and flow. And so nature actually, not only is she nourishing you according to what you need in the environment that you need, but she's supporting you to evolve, to grow, to transform, just like she is. There's a birth, life, death cycle. And so it translates into our human journey.
Well,
food aligns you with this. Now, you know, in my, as you know, I did plant spirit medicine training. I did a lot of connecting with the spirit of plants. So not only do they energetically have qualities that align you, they have a consciousness that supports your spiritual journey. And so it's all lined up. All you have to do is connect in with it. And you can imagine what we're like, a culture, a society that is in a state of panic, that has disconnected from our very mother. So you can imagine how what it would happen with a society that feels this deep connection, feels held by her, nourished by her, and guided to grow, transform, evolve. Then food goes, I can take this, you know, to the nth degree. I mean, this is literally, the food literally is a bridge that unites the spirit and the body, heaven and earth, the masculine, the feminine. I mean, it's an amazing, amazing,
Well, you know what I'm hearing you say, and I mean, you know, I've been around goddess spirituality for a really long time now, more than 20 years, and this might have been out there, but this wasn't something that I heard, you know, if you know what I mean. I was maybe focused on other things, you know, politics or spirituality or something like that, but you've really sort of given listeners and myself, I mean, you're really sort of adding a new dimension to our spirituality, a new dimension to our relationship with the sacred feminine. I mean, this is awesome, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, this is just another piece of the puzzle. And imagine if down the road, you know, as more and more people learn about goddess, learn about the ideals and what it really means socially, politically, culturally, you know, for equality and all of those different things. You know, imagine if we really could grow up in a culture that knew what you're teaching and knew what so many others within the movement know. I mean, dare I say utopian? You know, imagine if we were all that interconnected to the mother and each other. Wow, it's such a more beautiful place than where society feels like it is right now, you know, where we feel like we're on the brink of who knows what.
Well, we're on the brink of disaster. And for me, it's not about showing up as the white knight on the horse to save the planet. It's about I think she is the one who's going to pull us through this, and it's going to be from honoring her wisdom. Honoring it enough to live by her wisdom. I personally feel that is the way out and into a harmonious existence, and one that is not so destructive, and it is honoring of all sentient beings, including the very plants and animals that offer up their life to feed us. And you can imagine, just the simple act of the basic eating locally and seasonally, the impact it would have on how much of this oil that we're using to ship food all over the world. I mean, think of the impact that would have on our Mother Earth, just that alone.
Right. Well, yeah, because we're talking about the cost. I mean, just the practical aspect of it. We're talking about the toll it takes in resources. But you have this, you know, you've added this other layer to this, you know, this helping us be that much more you know, to go within and be more connected to her. I'm sure, you know, next time I think about pulling into McDonald's, you know, or Del Taco or something like that, I'm going to think twice because I don't think I'll ever look at that food the same way. I mean, I knew it wasn't healthy, but it's like, oh, you know, but I guess I didn't think of it as, in a sense, rejecting the mother, you know, in which she teaches us and helping, you know, helping us be disconnected from her by, you know, eating that junk.
And then we go back to what we talked about earlier. That translates into self-rejection.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's where it's self-similar. We are, you know, we are self-similar to the earth. So when we reject her wisdom, we're rejecting our own.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the divine feminine. So for us to really honor the divine feminine and welcome her back, we need to honor her wisdom. And it is not just pushing forward and ignoring the rhythm, the flow, the time to go inward, the time to move forward, the time, you know, to let go. All of this whole rhythm, and when to slow down, when to speed up. We just have the pedal to the metal, and we're going forward as fast as we can.
Yeah, we're like rats on a wheel, you know.
Exactly. So it's not just the way we eat. What it does when you start looking at our connection and how we nourish ourselves on this level is that it sets you up to start shifting your relationship with life itself and the rhythm and flow of life itself. And, you know, it transforms our existence into, you know, it is a time to move forward. It is a time to step back. It is a time to go inward. It is a time to slow down. That's what we're not doing. So eating this way, nourishing ourselves, connecting with this rhythm and flow actually changes everything.
And I can see how it would if this really became something that a big majority of people understood and ascribed to. It really would make a huge impact.
It would.
Well, and I assume you probably feel like organics or the way to go. I mean, to avoid anything if it's not organic.
Absolutely. Absolutely. When you think about what they're doing to food these days with the genetically modified foods, and you have no idea which foods are and which foods aren't, what do you think it's doing to our mother to be putting poison into her body? Is that another form of rejection? Is that another form of disrespect and dishonor? It is. It just moves through everything. It comes back to us in many ways. Then we find that our water is poisoned, that, you know, it's our air is poisoned. It all ties together. So what I'm talking about is that it is about relationship, and it's about honor and respect on every single level. And this is the foundation. This is the very foundation of that. So organic is the beginning, and it's a doorway into that, just like the slow food movement, just like the sustainability movement.
What is the slow food movement? I don't think you've explained that.
Well, the slow food movement is that was started, I think, in Italy by when they wanted to put a McDonald's in Italy, and one of the famous chefs, and I can't remember his name, I apologize, but he said, that's it, that does it. And so it's turned into a worldwide movement of going back to honoring and respecting food, where it comes from, you eat it as close to its natural source, and it's not about eating food as fast as you can, cooking it as fast as you can. It's about having relationship with your food and really stepping back, and when you turning it back into this sacred art as opposed to a science project that you have to get all of your vitamins and minerals and or eat as fast as you can on the run. This is about returning to it as a sacred art, basically.
Well, and you know, you've made me really think about a lot of things here and connect a lot of dots. You know, that makes me think about the family sitting down at the table together. How that could also, create bonds within the family that maybe we just don't think a whole lot anymore because kids got to go to soccer practice or rehearsals or whatever it is. You know what I mean? We're all running in 10 different directions. And, you know, it's like we all just really need to slow down, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, too, when you were talking about the organics and, we don't know if our food is being, what was the phrase again? You said genetically modified and how that's poisoning the earth. And I'm thinking in that, in turn, you know, we're getting cancer and all of this sort of stuff. And, you know, it's like it all goes down, it goes back to really a lack of respect for the earth, a lack of respect for your fellow human being, you know, I mean, all of these different things. I think we've sort of disconnected all of these things and haven't really looked at them as an interconnected problem of lack of respect that maybe, you know, starts with disrespecting the earth.
Yes, and our bodies, which are self-similar. And so as we welcome the Divine Feminine back in, what's happening right now is she is shining a light on all of the shadowy disrespect, dishonoring activities and ways that we have been operating for all this time. I think she's shining a light on it, and she is bringing back this respect, this honor. In order for us to live in harmony and to have her come back and take her place, these are the qualities that she's bringing with us or with her. And in order to have that honor and respect, we have to take a serious, honest look on how we have not been doing that. And she's shining a beacon light on it.
I totally agree with you. I really do. I think we are so out of sync. You know, most people are so out of sync that we really have to be hit between the eyes like with a baseball bat with the utter devastation. And I think that's what we're seeing in the Gulf, with Wall Street, with everything. You know, it's almost like she's making us look at it all. She's saying, look at the mess you are making, you know, and it's going to be the end if you don't get with it, you know.
I totally agree with you, Karen. I think that's exactly what's happening. That is the Divine Feminine. That's the Black Madonna. That's Kali. That's all these different aspects of the Divine Feminine that's shaking us up and says, take a look, you know. And she's doing it compassionately, but she's telling us to grow up and start respecting and honoring. And so where I'm coming from is that this is the foundation is what I'm presenting. We have to start over, and this is the foundation.
I wish what you are teaching here in your book, this literally should be in home ec classes, somehow taught in college, or not just college, but the school curriculums, seriously, or UU churches, or I hope you maybe think about
taking this to to another level, and you know, trying to get the information in your book, into actual teaching institutions, because I think what you're doing is really vital.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit. Tell us a little bit about your workshops, real quick. I see my second guest is just called into the switchboard, and we'll probably get to her in about 5 minutes if she can be just a little bit patient, because we started a tad late because of a technical glitch. But tell us a little bit about your workshops or classes. Is this something you can do online if you're not there in the same city where you are? And want to make sure we mention not just your book title again, but also your website.
Well, my website is divinenourishment.net. My book is Divine Nourishment, A Woman's Sacred Journey with Food. And I do have online course, and I'm presenting a series of classes on the Wise Woman University site. And I'm offering that, and I'm going to start offering teleconference classes because I want to reach as many women as possible. And because of the economy and stuff like that, in, you know, I'm trying to offer as much support as I can in an affordable way that you don't have to be where I live. And then I also have, you know, just intimate retreats. It's like a respite. I live out in the woods, and so I invite women to come as friends and to share a weekend with me, and we just drop into nature, and they get an opportunity to just feel themselves, who they are with that, you know, they see themselves reflected back from nature, and an opportunity to just drop in and honor themselves with simple things. We cook together, we sit by the fire, we go to the swimming hole, we putz in the garden, we gather wild food, we make herbal medicine, you know, we do facials, things that are just for women to start coming back to themselves and go, I am honoring myself with just the pleasure of being a woman, and I'm witnessing myself reflected through the eyes of nature. And that's basically what I'm supporting women to do. And in my book, the first half of the book is, let's get real about the collective wounding that we're dealing with, you know, and let's be willing to go into the darkness, into the shadows, reclaim those parts that are still stuck in the shadows. Here are some practices, and then if we want to really reclaim our wisdom, here, the second half of the book is basically, this is the wisdom articulated through the language of nature that we are reconnecting with. Here it is, broken down season by season. Here are cooking methods. Here are foods to eat. Here are recipes. Here is what the energetic qualities of each season is. So I'm supporting the healing of the feminine at the same time I'm seeping in the wisdom of the earth and the divine feminine, so you can, they can fill in the cracks, let's say. So it's a twofold thing. Let's work with the problem, let's work with the solution, weave them together and take a journey together.
Well, I tell you, Mary, I wish I was in North Carolina. That sounds like so much fun. It sounds like, it sounds heavenly, delicious. I'm going to have to find out if there's something like this out here in California, or who knows, maybe I'll take a trip to North Carolina when you're doing something like this sometime. It just sounds splendid, and I'm so glad you're doing this, and you're helping teach women, you know, this forgotten knowledge I'm sure women used to know, you know. Okay, so the book, again, listeners, please, I'm sure you can probably get it on Amazon or order it. The book is Divine Nourishment, A Woman's Sacred Journey with Food, and the author we have been speaking to, and she has been helping us rethink what we put in our mouth and how really important that is, a new dimension to our spirituality. Her name is Mary Lane, and her website is divinenourishment.net. Mary, thank you so much for being on the show, and please keep in touch with me. Let me know what you're doing. I'd love to keep up with how this is progressing and how you're managing to, you know, educate more women about this really important subject.
Thank you, Karen. I really appreciate the opportunity to be able to share this, and thank you so much for allowing me.
Oh, you're welcome. You've been lovely. Thank you so much. And, you know, we owe you a debt of gratitude. You know, there's so many women out there. They all have a little piece of the puzzle, you know. And I just think every day, you know, we're just reweaving this beautiful tapestry of the sacred feminine. And, you know, you're one of those threads. So thank you so much for your life of dedication, dedicated to this. I wish you the best with it.
Thank you, Karen. Thank you.
Well, good night.
Good night.
Well, listeners, that was Mary Lane, and that was very insightful. And I would like to let you know that our second guest of the evening is waiting in the wings here, and I thank her for her patience. Heather, let me bring her on, because I think she's muted right now.
I'm here.
Are you there with me? Hi.
I am. Hi. How are you?
Fine. Thank you so much for calling in, and thank you for your patience. I'm getting to you just a little bit late because we had some technical difficulties at the very top of the show, but that all worked out, thank goodness.
Oh, no, it sounded very interesting, so I was glad to hear what I heard.
Well, thank you, and I'm so glad you're with us tonight, because your topic too, you're the author of the book Dancing in the Footsteps of Eve, Retrieving the Healing Gift of the Sacred Feminine for the Human Family Through Myth and Mysticism. And before we start our chat, I always like to sort of let listeners know a little bit about my guest. So, yes. Listeners, I want you to know that Heather Mendel, she's a mystic, an author, a calligraphic designer, and an artist. She was born in South Africa, and she lives on the West Coast now in San Luis Obispo, California, with her husband, Rabbi Norman Mendel. Her first book is titled Toward Freedom. It was published in 1995, and the book we're going to talk about tonight was released in November of last year. Her newest artwork is going to be shown as a one-woman exhibit in upstate New York in July, and it's entitled Nothing as It Appears, Mandalas, Fractals, and Sacred Geometry. So, Heather, thank you so much, and I want to know everything you think we need to know to rethink and reclaim Eve. We're talking about Eve from the Bible, yes?
That's correct, and I would like to thank you for giving me this opportunity to share with you and share with your audience. As you said, the book that's just come out is Dancing in the Footsteps of Eve, and so maybe a good place to start would be by asking and answering the question, who is Eve? And in the way that I tell the story, which is a Kabbalistic look at biblical text in order to find a God that is meaningful in a quantum era and to find the sacred feminine in Judaism, I think I may need to start by going back to what you said, in that I think we are all products of the time and place in which we lived. And having been raised in apartheid South Africa, I saw firsthand the destructive nature of separation and discrimination. At the same time, I was being raised in a Jewish home where my own spiritual journey was motivated by the concept of tikkun olam, or repairing the world and making right what is wrong. And so I found myself at a very interesting juncture in time and space in which my own spiritual journey began. And so for me, the questions that I think all spiritual seekers ask, who am I and why am I here and where am I going, certainly started my spiritual journey at a very young age. And as I matured and came to the United States in 1986 and heard Rhianne Eisler being interviewed just after her book Chalice and the Blade came out, my own spiritual journey took on two extra questions that really motivated my writing of this book, Dancing in the Footsteps of Eve. First of all, I was very curious as to how a patriarchal religion like Judaism could birth strong, independent women and the men who loved them, because this is the story not only of my family history, but the majority of Jewish women will tell you a very similar story. So how does a patriarchal religion birth strong, independent women and generations of them and the men who loved them? And second of all, once I got involved in understanding what the feminist movement was all about, in South Africa, you can understand, all our social conscience was aimed towards eradicating the dreadful ills of apartheid and the separation of people by race. Coming to the United States and learning what feminism is, I learned that sexism and racism were really two sides of a similar coin. So I wanted to know, where was the sacred feminine in Judaism? And I really needed to do some digging and some delving, which took me on, I think, a very fascinating journey. And the more I studied and the more I read, the more I realized that as I was motivated by my own curiosity, I began to understand something about Eve, who is at the primal or foundational feminine archetype in Western culture, certainly for the Abrahamic families of religions. And I realized that my curiosity could either lead me to an expanded reality or cause me a great deal of trouble, especially as a rabbi's wife. My curiosity was definitely leading me to try and peer through the veil. And I realized that curiosity is a God-given gift that drives our human story forward, whether that curiosity is in a scientific field or for wisdom in a spiritual search. And I came to realize then that for me, Eve is far more than one woman and a bad woman at that in one garden at one time in history. If we understand the creation story as poetic metaphor for how human beings find themselves in a world, a physical world, in nature's garden, in fact, Eve then emerges, not as we have been told, as a disobedient temptress who causes all the troubles of human life upon the rest of humankind. Rather, I began to understand Eve did just what she was intended to do by God. She was intended to start the human journey of spiritual beings when she was ready to undertake all that physical life would bring into being. So reading the creation story in the traditional way, in which I think most of your listeners will be familiar and come to the conclusion about Eve being a temptress and a disobedient woman, I think that reading the story in that way, we find ourselves confronted with two enormous problems. One being that woman, whether we call her Eve, or the Greeks called her Pandora, or I'm sure we could come up with many other names of many other archetypes, that woman is the cause of all the hardships in physical life, a big problem. And the second problem that I was left to wonder about was the nature of God. What sort of God would bless us with curiosity and then punish us for using it? So I had to deal with these issues as well as the ones about where I was and where I was going as a spiritual being. And I decided that I would try and put some of this together in the book that came out in November. And although obviously written from a Jewish perspective, I've really been delighted to find out that it's talking to people from many different religious backgrounds and many different spiritual pathways, and that's really what I was hoping for with this book. I feel... Go ahead, Karen.
No, that's okay. Let me first say briefly, probably most of our listeners know that Eve really got a bad rap, and they don't believe the traditional interpretations, but I'm hoping that you will explain to us how Eve, which, as you say, I think accurately, you know, she sort of represents knowledge and curiosity. How could that become a bad thing? I mean, how could that be demonized? You know, I've always felt like if I don't mean to be offensive here to anyone, but if God, I mean, I think of God as the ultimate wisdom, love, compassion, all of these wonderful virtues. So if God is worth having as God, I just can't see him demonizing curiosity, knowledge, sexuality, beauty. So I hope you'll explain that, and I wonder, was it not God, but how man interprets God? You know?
Exactly, because I think when one finds oneself in that situation, as I think any woman and any spiritual seeker does, either there is something wrong with God or there's something wrong with the story. And I think that the story and, in fact, the names and images that we have evolved to describe this power that we see as the designer of the universe has given God a bad rap. And I certainly think that when we go into Kabbalah, into Jewish mysticism, there is a way of delving below the literal reading of this story that comes up with a totally different archetype. And I think that particularly for listeners on your program, we don't need to expand on how disastrous the idea of certainly woman as bad, woman as being cause of trouble, has been difficult and terrible for the history of womankind. But I think it's the same story has led to a separation of men from women, of men and women from God, and nature from God, all of things we are seeing the ultimate destruction of these kind of thought processes. So what I've done in my looking at the story once again is to delve below the surface and to realize that in point of fact, if the story was to be told again and in a different way, even using the same symbols of the garden, the man, and the woman, we could come up with a totally different archetype that I think would lead to a totally different attitude to men and to women, to divinity and our relationship to divinity, and certainly could lead us to a conclusion like our fairy tales have led us to, and they could all live happily ever after. Because I think just the way the Bible story starts in the beginning, like our children's stories once upon a time, those stories all ended and we all lived happily ever after. But as the story has evolved for us and where we find ourselves now, I think that happily ever after is very difficult to achieve unless we realize that instead of seeing the story of one woman in one garden at one point of time, that Eve represents the curious, intuitive, hopeful, and courageous energy that resides within every human being, that drives us to question everything we see, and that moves the human adventure story in the knowledge that we are doing exactly what God intended us to do. I think when we look at the story of the Garden of Eden, we realize that it is just a story. And Karen, you may be familiar with that wonderful Buddhist saying that says, the finger that points at the moon is not the moon. And I think that stories, like the finger, will point us in the direction of a greater truth, but they are not the moon. It's not the truth itself. So I think these stories invite us to delve deeper, to see a meaning that is relevant to us and to find a truth that is hidden within these words that you will not see when you read this on a literal level. So if we
Well, I do have a question for you, and where you're going with this, this may not be important, but I do want to ask you, because I think it really is important, at least I do. I mean, you know, whether we're talking about, somebody who led us into a bogus war, or we're talking about who demonized Eve, you know, I want to know where or who made things go awry. So where would we point the finger? I mean, who first distorted this? And was it just for power and control for the ancient patriarchs? I mean, why did it get distorted? And who distorted it?
Well, I think that's the question that we all really have. And I think that certainly as a student of feminism and a student of spirituality, I think the patriarchy came into being thousands of years before Judaism was born. And I think that if one's looking for somewhere to put the blame, I don't think it's on any person or group. I think it's a mindset that came into being. Whether it's as Rhianne Eisler and others like Rhianne have come to the conclusion that social change came about because of invaders that came down from the north and brought with them a sky god that replaced the earth goddess, or whether it's, as Leonard Schlein suggests, an inside job, that in point of fact, as we became literate, our emphasis became linear and logical, and we inside, as we began to read, changed from this idea of being right-brained, being more intuitive, being meditative, and so on, and became more literal and left-brained in that way.
You're talking about the author of The Alphabet and the Goddess.
Exactly. Okay. And, you know, he says this happened on the inside on a neurological level. Rhianne and people like Rhianne suggest that this happens on the outside. The patriarchy comes into being. The goddess-worshipping cultures that were there for thousands of years before the patriarchy were certainly overthrown. We see this in the Greek mythology. We see it in mythology throughout the world. And certainly we see this in the beginnings of the Genesis stories, where we have the same idea of this patriarchal image being introduced into the text and then certainly being exaggerated as it goes on into other religious traditions who take over the Jewish traditions and move with them possibly even in a more extreme fashion. So like you, I would love to know who really do we blame, but I think it's a societal construct more than an individual group of individuals. And I think that if we are moving forward, I think that once we know that we can re-examine this fundamental story about who woman is, who Eve is, and we can find a positive archetype of an energy rather than a woman, but an energy force, a feminine energy force, the sacred feminine that's alive and well within women and hopefully within men, we find that if we follow our curiosity, if we follow our intuition, if we are hopeful and courageous and can move ourselves out of situations where we feel constricted, where we take a chance, where we'll step into the unknown, that I think there we find our empowerment for ourselves, for other people, and I think with that as an archetypal image for womankind, I think that we can create a very different society, and I can see a happily ever after ending to our story.
Well, obviously, from what you're saying, it's not, you know, not just important, but it's almost vital that we reinterpret and reclaim maybe the more authentic Eve.
Yes, I really do believe that's true, and I think that certainly from a Jewish perspective, the whole of the Torah text was never intended to be read literally only. One can certainly read on a literal level, but I think Jewish study has always believed that in point of fact there are two Torahs, two Bibles, if you like. One that's written in letters on parchment, and the other that's hidden in the spaces between the letters. In other words, Judaism has always acknowledged that there is a literal or surface superficial telling of these tales. But if you really want to study, you need to find ways of getting into the spaces between the letters, of delving beneath the surface, and of coming up with the truth, that finger that's pointing at the moon, to find the magnificence and the beauty and the poetry of what these stories are all talking about. And going the Kabbalistic route and going back to these stories, I really found that I'm comfortable in this image of Eve that I have feel is alive and well for me, as I hope it is for others, as I'm seeing around me, as I see other women, so many women that you interview on your program, who empowered and bold and courageous and hopeful and intuitive are stepping forward and are bringing into being a new way of accepting, of understanding, of taking our rightful place in this world that badly needs femininity and sacred feminine in all her attributes.
Well, Heather, is this rethinking of Eve? Is there a movement within Judaism to do this, or is this on the fringe?
Well, I think that Judaism is probably a long way ahead of many other religious traditions. I won't even go into the spiritual traditions beyond the normative religious ones. But certainly I was raised within the Reform Jewish movement, where they've been ordaining women rabbis for the last 30 or 35 years. Women have always enjoyed an equality within the Reform Jewish movement, possibly for a much longer period than anybody even really knows. And so these questions, I think, have been asked for a long time. And so to be on your radio and show and say that every Jewish woman thinks like I do and is, you know, comfortable with these images would not be correct. But I think that certainly there is a feeling across the realm of all the religions and spiritual traditions that something is changing. The goddess is rising, and I think she rises for each of us in our own way. We all express it in the language and the symbols that are comfortable to us in the particular tradition that we come from. And so whereas I'm sure that there are many other Jewish women who have come to this understanding of Eve that I've put forward in my book, I hope that she's a universal image, a universal archetype that calls to women of all religious traditions and all spiritual traditions as being valid. She is for me the sacred feminine alive and well. She is an aspect of the feminine face of God that we feel rather than we think. And I hope this is the level at which my readers and the listeners this evening may respond, that when we hear about this much more positive, courageous, hopeful, intuitive energy that is there and alive within us, we can relate to that and then understand that what the story of the Garden of Eden is telling us about is that we are here in nature's garden. It's not the laboratory of Eden or the studio of Eden. It's the Garden of Eden. It's the wonderful natural world in which we find ourselves as physical beings. And we were put here to go out and bring spirituality into the physical plane. And I think that's what the story is really telling us when we go below the surface. God didn't put us in a garden, give us curiosity, and punish us for using it. God wanted us. When I tell the story in the workshops that I do, I brought this up into a much more modern virtual waiting room kind of story. And in the story, I say there's a missing refrain that we don't hear in the biblical text. God doesn't say, don't eat of the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. The part that we don't hear is, until you are ready for all that life has to offer. In other words, when we take on physical reality, we know there's the beauty of the sunset and the smell of jasmine and the kiss of a lover and the tiny fingers of a newborn baby that encircle our fingers that we love. We also know that physical life has disappointment and despair and disillusion and heartbreak and illness and death. That's all part of physical reality. So when we add the refrain that we don't hear in the literal tale, until you are ready, do not eat the fruit of the tree of life. In other words, do not take on the duality of this physical world. when you are ready, step forward, and that's exactly what Eve does in the story. Bravely, courageously stepping into the unknown, she steps out of that garden, taking Adam along with her, and they start the human journey. I think that for many women today, when we think traditionally of Eve and we think of the guilt and remorse and shame that's associated with the literal story, we see that too many women are dealing with those same sort of emotions and reactions in their own lives. And many of us reach a stage where, for whatever reason, we need to step out. We need to step out into a different and unknown reality. We need the bravery. We need the courage. We need to use our intuition as to when the time is right. And I think that with an image like this of Eve doing exactly what God wants her to do when she is ready, I think we then have an archetype that will serve us well and that will serve the human family well as we do what we were intended to do to make this world a better place.
Amen and all hallelujah. I am with you there, sister. That was a mouthful and so eloquently put. I'm your cheerleader here.
Thank you so much, Karen.
I wish I had pom-poms because that was just beautiful.
Well, I'm really glad, and I must say that, you know, the book came out in November. I'm finding that people are responding, and what's really interesting to me, not just women, but men who are brave enough to venture into this field are finding an understanding there that's touching something deep within them, so that I'm getting a response, just as you've said, from women from various traditions and backgrounds, and some who don't have any religious upbringing at all. But we all know this image of Eve, the way it's portrayed and the way it's infiltrated Western culture. And I think the time has come for us to really do something about this. And so I'm really grateful that you gave me the opportunity to share some of these thoughts with you this afternoon, this evening.
Well, you know, I am so glad you came on because I am like 1,000% there with you on everything you said. I don't disagree with a thing, because I really do think, you know, in this age right now, women need to, you know, to revel in our courage, in our sexuality, in our knowledge, in our curiosity, in our intuition. You know, we have to really step up and empower ourselves, and, you know, some of us call it, claim our voice or our sacred rage or that sacred roar, because,
yes,
you know, we have been left out of the equation for so long,
exactly.
or worse yet, marginalized and demonized, and look what it's gotten us, you know?
Exactly. I think, too, that the time is really right because I don't know if we've got time to go on or not, Karen. Do we have a little more time?
We have about 15 minutes left, and I want you to cover the points that you think are the most important in these 15 minutes.
Well, you know, I can go on for a very long time, so please interrupt me as you need to. But I think that the time is right. We all recognize this. We sense this within our beings. The transformation of society is underway. The rising of the goddess is happening, whatever we call that. And the time is now. I think, to me, it's really fascinating how the whole world of quantum physics has opened up a totally different reality for the human family. And we're beginning to understand that this idea of reading, for example, reading biblical text as an example on more than one level is really needed. Quantum physics is beginning to show us that the world is far more interconnected, far more mysterious, far more multi-layered than we had ever thought it was before. And I think that in this world where we realize that everything that we think, that we feel, that we believe affects not only ourselves, but affects our entire environment, it's very important what we hold dear, what our values are, what we think and believe. And I think that we need to know that in an age like this, a quantum age, that our ideas, if they're going to be of any good to us, must be able to stand up to the test of putting it forward, are we able to deal on more than one level? Can we go beyond just the literal level, for example? Can we find that the way we believe these stories to be are going to have any relevance as we evolve as a human family, as as our consciousness begins to evolve and awaken and take us to different levels that we were, you know, at before. So for me, it's really interesting where we see that quantum physics and spiritual teachings of the ages are all coming together, are all describing a reality that's different below the surface to what we see above it. You were kind enough to mention this art show of mine that is starting, in fact, tomorrow, where I've tried to do in visual images what the book has done in words, but again, encourage people, either viewers of the exhibition or readers of the book or listeners to the show, to go beyond what's on the surface, to open up to this expanded reality of what else is out there and waiting for us if we're brave enough to look. And for many people, you know, all the strictures, the no, no, don't do that, don't go there, hold us back instead of allowing us to be the Eve of modernity, to step forward, take that fruit, which to me is to take life, and to see where it's going to lead us bravely and with courage and with hope. And by following our intuitive sense, we will find ourselves going into places that we didn't know, but we're going to find connections and meaning, metaphor and myths, symbols, layers of meaning that I think are going to bring all sorts of excitement and added benefits to who we are as individuals and as a human family.
So Heather, where does the sacred masculine fit into this picture? Does it have to change just like we are, you know, rethinking Eve and women are reclaiming their wholeness? You know, give me the big picture of the divine feminine, sacred feminine and sacred masculine together.
Yes. I think that that's really important, and I think this whole idea of, you know, the sacred masculine becomes particularly important when we look around us, because we're defining sacred feminine, and I know that men who come to read the book that I've written have said, yes, and what about us? How do you describe sacred masculine? And I think that what we need to do is talk about not only sacred masculine and feminine, but secular masculine and feminine. I know that I hear around me when we talk about sacred feminine, and I'll define that for you in a moment as to what I believe that really entails, but I hear so many women say, yes, sacred feminine is rising, that is for sure, but when we look at some of the women on the political scene, these are not women who are putting forward the sacred feminine in action. And I go back to the thing Gloria Steinem said many years ago, when she said, you know, as we look around us, we see that there are many women who are what we can call female imposters. They may be in feminine bodies, but they are really doing the masculine role. They're playing the masculine game. That's not bringing the sacred feminine down to earth. So I think when we look at masculine and feminine energies, we need to look at both sacred and secular. And I think that when women are trying to buy in to play it the man's way, to play it in a man's role, that to me is much more about secular feminine than being bringing sacred feminine into being. I think that for me, the sacred feminine is talking about the feminine face of God. It's what we feel rather than what we think. And I think that the characteristics of the sacred feminine we can see in each other when we start seeing that we pay attention, first of all, to our intuitive knowing. When we pay attention to our hunches, our gut feelings, our dreams, when we look at coincidences and synchronicities in our lives, and we value that as much as we value the knowledge that comes through left brain. So we're introducing right brain knowing that I think is far older than anything we can come to through the left brain. That to me, sacred feminine in action, first of all. Second of all, I think the ability to love unconditionally is not an impossible thing to do. I think that a mother with having a baby that she has wanted and expects loves that child unconditionally before she knows what it looks like, before she knows what gender it is, before she knows how that child's going to turn her life upside down. She loves that child unconditionally, as hopefully she does once the baby is born. And I think that if a mother is able to love unconditionally the child that she gives birth to, I think that this is an ability that human beings have and that we can foster when we see it. I think that's the sacred feminine in action. Thirdly, I think that what we're doing here this afternoon or this evening, it's still afternoon for me in Hawaii, what we're doing is sharing knowledge by stories. I think the sacred feminine is alive and well when we use this way to teach each other, to share with each other, to learn with each other, to listen. We do this in the form of storytelling rather than the classroom, you know, Aristotelian methods of gaining knowledge and sharing knowledge. But this is storytelling that's a very powerful way of sharing information. I think also that valuing laughter and not taking ourselves too seriously is the sacred feminine in action. I think that the deepest thing of the sacred feminine is really an ability to connect with one another, to be able to be, as Barbara Marx Hubbard says, super sexually intimate with one another. In other words, I think that we can get to a point where we really deeply listen to, hear, appreciate one another. Again, I think that's the sacred feminine in action. I think it's something that women are able to do very easily with other women. I feel badly for men because I don't think that, as a rule, men are able to intimately connect with one another. They normally connect with their partners and so get into that sort of realm. But women are able to do this very easily, especially when the sacred feminine is alive and well in them. And finally, I think that when the sacred feminine is active within us, we really do celebrate our diversity. We're not fearful of difference. We celebrate the diversity that we find around us. Because I think from a Jewish mystical point of view, the dilemma is we have to learn to understand that each of us is a totally unique being. There will never be another one of us quite like us ever again. And at the same time, we are all identical. We are all individual sparks of divinity, all taking physical forms, all absolutely alike in that way. And so we have to come to terms with our uniqueness and our diversity. And when we can truly celebrate that diversity, then I think the sacred feminine is alive and well within us. So we're dealing there with the feminine. You are started out by asking about the sacred masculine, and I'm certainly not a scholar in this particular realm, but as I think about it for myself, I think the sacred masculine characteristics that we see within men and that we see within women who have that sacred masculine balanced within them, I think the characteristics are protector, a procurer, problem solver, and I think groundedness, strength, fortitude, and teaching are all things that the sacred masculine may have to offer. I think when this then becomes secular rather than sacred, I think that we can see need will turn to greed. I see that self-empowerment will become power over. I see protection becomes domination. I see cooperation will become competition. And I think that these are some of the characteristics that we associate with masculine, but I think that it's secular masculine rather than sacred. And so if we go back to what are the sacred masculine qualities for me, I think protection, procuring, providing for, problem solving, perhaps those are the things that we honor most in the sacred masculine. And I guess for all of us, the goal is to bring alive within us both masculine and feminine qualities that we can become balanced individuals and that we can bring the best that is within us into the world and give of all the gifts that we actually have.
Well, you know, Heather, I think that's really important, that distinction you made between the sacred masculine, whether it be spiritual or secular. That sounded so right to me.
Yes.
Please repeat one more time. The sacred masculine, in the spiritual. It's protection, procurement, problem solving, and what was the...
And I said, I thought also that I think a certain groundedness is a sacred masculine quality, because I think with the feminine, once we allow the intuitive to really become alive within us, I think it's very, very easy to lose some of our groundedness. And I think that one of those sacred masculine qualities, again, reminds us that we are earth-born and heaven-sent, that we're on this earth for a purpose, that we need to be grounded. We need to be part of Mother Earth. At the same time, we allow our imagination and our intuition to fly. But I think that the sacred masculine within us is grounded, is practical, will take care of providing food and nurturing and support, will protect, will problem solve on a very practical level. And I think those are qualities that the total individual tries and strives to develop within themselves, be they men or women.
Wow, you know, this is really awesome. I really love the way you have thought this out and distinguished that, because it sounds brilliant to me, quite frankly. Thank you. Thank you so very much. You, Heather, you are a delight.
Thank you so much. Karen, I really appreciate this opportunity to be on the show. I have followed you since we first made connection some 6 or 7 months ago, and I think you're doing fantastic work, and I'm just so delighted that you gave me this opportunity to share with you for a short while this evening.
Well, you know, it is my pleasure, and I'm glad we were able to make this happen sooner rather than later. I think you have an incredible, idea here with your book. I mean, you obviously have a lifetime of wisdom that I hope you reach a lot of people with, because it's obviously so important. And you know, as a radio show host, you are just a delight, because you're so precise, and I don't have to ask anything. I mean, you answer the question before I even get a chance to phrase it. So you've been wonderful. I would love to be in a weekend workshop with you. I would just soak everything in, you have to say, like a sponge.
Oh, well, I appreciate it. I hope I didn't go on too much, and I appreciate so much this time to be with you and to share. And, you know, as things evolve, I hope that in the future we may have a chance to meet personally. I just wish you every success with everything that you're undertaking right now, and greatly, greatly appreciate the opportunity you've given me this evening.
Oh, Heather, believe me, my pleasure. And I want to make sure we mention your websites, two websites that are very important. Listeners, I highly recommend her book, Dancing in the Footsteps of Eve, and the websites of the same name, dancinginthefootstepsofeve.com and wordartist.com.
Yes. That's
Heather,
great.
The best of luck to you with your art show. And
thank you.
And please, you know, if you take any pictures, please send them along to me. Maybe we can post them on my Facebook wall or something like that.
I would love to do that. Thank you so much. I certainly will. It was all sort of, it came on very suddenly, and I got the stuff off very quickly before we left California. I haven't had a chance to take any pictures, but I would be happy to do that, because, as I said, the art show is really trying to do in image what, you know, our conversation has involved this evening. Again, asking people to go beyond, go below, go beneath what is appearing on the surface, and try and find your way into something that's deeper, broader, more meaningful, that really makes life worthwhile, and gives us all that place of empowerment and healing to become all that we really should be.
Absolutely. Well, Heather, you are another thread in that beautiful tapestry. I was telling Mary Lane, I think women are being called to, you know, to weave, so that, you know, so that the future on this planet is worth living in a more uplifted and enlightened, sustainable way. So thank
right.
you for your contributions. Because
my great pleasure.
Yeah, because what you have to say is vital and important. So one more time, listeners, those websites, Dancing in the Footsteps of Eve, which is the name of Heather Mendel's book, and wordartist.com. So, Heather, please stay in touch, and, you know, I would really like that.
Thank you so much. I look forward to doing that, Karen, and best of luck with everything you're doing. Thank you so much for what you're doing for women all over the world, because with what you're doing, they can access you all over the world. Thank you for what you're doing, and just wish you every success in all that you're undertaking.
Thank you. Thank you so very much. And have a good evening tonight and a good exhibit tomorrow.
Thank you so much, and to you. Take care, Karen.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Well, listeners, I know many of us feel hopeless sometimes. Many of us maybe even feel vulnerable and lost. But you know what? Then we hear people like we've had on the show tonight, Heather Mendel, with her wisdom about Eve, bringing that to the masses, and Mary Lane helping us get back to basics with divine nourishment. And we realize we do have a blueprint. We really do have the answers out there. You know, there are so many women, each with that sacred thread of that divine tapestry, or that piece of that elusive puzzle. It's out there. And I also want to bring you something from another woman who I believe helps us understand what's going on. Her name is Flash Silvermoon. And she has been very accurate in her astrological predictions. And, we see everything going on around us, and we feel the profound shifts coming. And in that vein, I want to read to you from Flash Silvermoon's July. She calls it her Astro Flash. She says, sometimes I wish my predictions were not quite so accurate. When I suggested in April's Astro Flash that the entrance of the asteroid Chiron into the sign of Pisces would bring all manner of water issues to the fore, that the use and abuse of our seas and rivers could become a major deal, I had no idea that the BP oil spill would create a disaster of cataclysmic proportions. I could not have imagined murderous flash floods in several states, and yet the gusher in the Gulf occurred on the very day that Chiron went into Pisces. On summer solstice, Chiron, June 21st, will be in a grand water trine with the sun and the moon, and my circle will be harnessing that energy in a ritual with many others around the world. As I write this, the frogs outside my door break into a cacophony of croaks affirming the coming waters. July 1st, the moon in Pisces will conjoin Chiron, in other words, make it more potent and amplified. So tie up your boats and don't forget the umbrellas, as it's likely to be a pretty fluid situation. Makes me think about the hurricane right now in the Gulf. For a long time, it will be all about water. However, the BP oil spill plays out, and with Pluto in Capricorn, the end of the plutocracy is near, with the corporate criminals starting to be discovered with their pants down and their collective hands in the till. With revolutionary Uranus and warlike Aries, the people from left to right will rise up and demand an end to the corporate takeover of America. Ah! These are the death throes of the patriarchy, and we will need to find good places to locate ourselves so that it doesn't fall on us. The energies of Uranus and Jupiter are still doing the Siamese twin dance, and Martial Aries and squaring Pluto and Capricorn could turn up the heat in the Middle East drama even further, with things getting white hot in both Iran and Israel. We'll appreciate Obama's cool head and diplomacy on these occasions while grumbling about his lack of heat and passionate response in the Gulf. If he were a Gemini, we could hope to have it both ways, but he's not. Back to Waterworld, July 11th offers a new moon and solar eclipse in watery Cancer. The day before the eclipse, Pluto will be opposite the moon and Jupiter-Uranus will make a square, all challenging aspects which lead me to suspect that we could be in for some big, unpredictable watery weather on July 10th or 11th, or perhaps there will be some break in the BP oil spill, or both. She says, brilliant astrologer Eric Francis
states, and I quote, "Eclipses are fulcrum events that concentrate both personal growth and the historic process. They define eras of time, but it's a little like getting propelled through a funnel and coming out in another dimension. Part of why they're so powerful is that they align several dimensions of space and time. In other words, they're multidimensional in a way that goes beyond what you ordinarily see in astrology," unquote. Flash goes on to say, "Life as we know it is in the process of some powerful changes, and the best way to prepare is to stay deeply grounded in the things, purpose, and people that mean the most to you. Saturn will re-enter Libra on July 21st, and it will tighten up the T-square formed with Uranus, Jupiter, Saturn, and Pluto, with Mars joining in on the 29th of the month. Those of us with planets in early Libra, Aries, Cancer, and Capricorn will be feeling like we're in a pressure cooker, and the heat, as they say, is on. Again, this is a time of action, and one need not be reckless, yet we might jump impulsively to relieve the pressure and wind up out of the frying pan and into the fire. July 25th is the full moon in Aquarius. Will show us more clearly what our heart's desires as well as our obstacles to attaining them. On the top of that, July 26th features the final exact opposition of Uranus and Saturn, one again creating a tug of war or seesaw between the establishment and the forces for change. Because the planets are now in cardinal signs, the push and pull will feel more extreme. The word on the street, to quote Jim Morrison, will be, we want the world and we want it now. Later we'll just not get it anymore, and the summer heat will see people in the street. If you are in integrity and alignment with your highest aspirations, you will find these times challenging, action-packed, and exhilarating. Conversely, if you have just been dragging your feet or white-knuckling the roller coaster of your so-called life, it's time to define your direction rather than letting it be defined for you. Then, that direction will feel like the integration of your best visions for yourself. I know that this all sounds hard and serious, but we can have a great time if we throw off our inner chains and bust right into our new life and a new paradigm. Trust me, there is ecstasy out there. These are times of action and real change, and most of us like change like we like a root canal. Shifting on a deep level can be fear-producing, and the powers that be daily shower us with as much horror and worst-case scenarios as possible while lying about the really scary stuff. Truth is harder and harder to find, especially in the news, and so in all cases, your best guidance comes from within, which can be screaming if you are used to overriding or like the proverbial still small voice if you listen. Trust your gut, open your third eye wide. If not now, when? So that's Flash Silver Moon's Astro Flash, and you can go read it for yourself and maybe keep track of it every month if you like. Her website is flashsilvermoon.com. She's also an animal intuitive. She talks to the animals. She has her radio show on Wednesday nights called What the Animals Tell Me. She's a musician. She's designed a tarot deck. She's really awesome. So please check out flashsilvermoon.com. And in the remaining minutes of the show, I want to just maybe invite you to start to go within. We're going to go into tonight's evening prayer. I'm going to invite you to sort of shake off all of that angst that Flash says we have ahead for July, and just sort of focus inward and take a deep breath with me, and bring your mind into a deep focus and sort of drop into that place inside, you know, where you go to connect with the mother. So, if you haven't already, close your eyes and take a deep breath with me. Transition to this other place, our personal sanctuary within. And with these words of prayer that were sent to me by a Facebook friend, I'd like to read these to you. This is in honor of the waters of the mother being defiled in the Gulf of Mexico because of the greedy and the careless and the negligent. This prayer is from the Koji Myth of Creation, and it goes like this. First there was the sea. Everything was dark. There was no sun, moon, people, animals, or plants. There was just sea everywhere. The sea was the mother. She was water, and there was water everywhere. She was the river, the lake, the sea, and she was everywhere. She was called Galchevang. The mother was not people nor anything. She was Aluna. She was the spirit of what was coming, and she was thought and memory. The mother only existed in thought in the lowest world, in the deepest part alone. And that's by Ernesto Cardinal. Well, listeners, I'd like to say goodbye for another week. And I leave you with the words of Mansoura Emoto, author of The Secret Life of Water. It goes back to that idea of our interconnectedness. And what was it Heather said? Connecting the spiritual with the quantum age, because we certainly learned from Mr. Mansoura Emoto that when we pray over water, it affects the molecular structure. So conversely, if negative things are said over water, it affects it negatively. So here are his words. Water reflects the human soul. If you say thank you to water, it will be reflected in the form of beautiful crystals overflowing with gratitude in return. So listeners, as you bathe tonight, as you brush your teeth, as you do your dishes, as you say prayers for our mother being defiled in the Gulf, let us remember to say we are sorry, ask her to forgive us, and say thank you to water. So good night, listeners, and thank you for tuning in. I hope you'll be back with us next Wednesday at 6 p.m. And please remember to vote for me in the Oprah audition until 12 midnight on Friday. And I'm going to close the last couple minutes of the show with, let's see, I think I'm going to play something by Leah Scallion, Breath of Life. And see if I can find it here. Okay, Breath of Life by Leah Scallion from her Song of Sirius CD. This is just a quick little snippet.